The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This is Oreo Cookie from Oakland, California, and it's plain to see, can't change me, because I'm going to be a roaster for life.
Don't miss the kickoff show next Monday with Mark Willard and Dan Dibley live 2 hours before the start of the 49ers game on Monday night against the Detroit Lions. Join us at the Hilton Santa Clara for delicious food, great drinks, and the best pregame show in the Bay Area, presented by Habas Law. When you've been wronged, Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit HabasLaw.com. We let this ride a little bit, Stephen. Sam Lubman, Jake Hutchinson here on the Morning Roast on Christmas Eve, and I don't want a lot for Christmas, Jake. I just want to be here with you guys. That's all I need.
Aww.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. I don't know all the words to this song. Not gonna keep doing it like this. Let's go to Dawn and Conquer. That's what I want for Christmas.
All right.
Dawn, happy holidays to you, buddy. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. I'm out here in Concord hanging out. Nice drizzly day. I want to shout out to the 49ers and the Raiders. And my Oakland A's, Sacramento A's, especially you, Sam. You've done a great job, and you do a good thing there for the Morning Roast.
Thank you, Don.
And you know what? Rocking around the Christmas tree. Don't want to have a happy holiday.
Love it, Don.
2025.
Hey, Don, are we going to get a better season out of the Bears next year? Oh, he dropped off. Don Conquered, big Cal Bear fan, which that's not an easy cross to bear. I grew up a Cal fan. It really sucks.
Calgrithm, baby.
The Cal love the Calgrithm.
It was beautiful for one shining moment this season.
Hey, man, my Canes took care of it, business against Cal, though, so I'm happy about that. But that was a hot night, too. Absolutely miserable until that fourth quarter. But, yeah, man, Cal football is just... Yeah, they're in a rough situation, as always. They're just fighting for survival there, and a spirited effort against UNLV in the Art of Sport LA Bowl hosted by Gronk. That is a real title for a bowl game.
Those are the dying words of capitalism. Those are the last things you hear before you sink into
that
the
is,
void. And
that is college football in a nutshell.
That's
how much capitalism can we shove down people's throats?
That's something you tell on your deathbed. You're like, I remember the Art of LA Bowl sponsored by Gronk. And they're like, okay, Grandpa. Okay, yeah. Grandpa. And then they pull the plug on you.
Exactly.
And that's where we're at.
Oh, God. Hey, we were just talking about the college football playoff during this last break. And I got into a big argument with Bontan Shasky yesterday about this. I thought it was a complete waste of time, those four games over the weekend. What that weekend told me is we should have just done eight teams in the playoff. But I know we need that sweet, sweet college football TV money, and none of us are happy unless a few TV execs can line their pockets with
more,
some more of our
more,
money.
More, right?
You know, it's all hail the mighty. We are not the United States of America, Jake. We are the United States of the dollar.
That's right.
I pledge allegiance to the dollar of the United States of the dollar, and to the dollar for which it stands, one nation under a dollar, with liberty and dollars for just a few select people.
That's right.
That is the American dream. Oh, man, it is rough. We're going to get into some Niner talk in a second. Jake, you're down at 49ers practice a lot, and I'm very curious as to what these practices are like. I've only gone to a couple of training camp practices.
Well, those are the ones to go to.
Yeah, those are probably the more fun ones, but I'm kind of curious how things look throughout the season because, it's a whole season. It's not just training camp. So I am curious how things are a little bit different. So I want to get your thoughts on that in just a second. We're talking about what we've learned about the 49ers this season, whether it's good or bad. What are your lessons? 888-957-9570 against Sam Lubman, Jake Hutchinson here on the Morning Roast on this Christmas Eve. We want to hear from you about the Niners. It is Christmas, though, so if you want to call in, sing your favorite Christmas carol. I don't care how good or bad it is. I want to hear it. I want to hear singing here on the Roast. We've had a couple people sing already. Heck, I've been singing. I'll join and sing with you if that makes it a little bit easier for you to call in and sing here. We just had a caller on who wanted to sing, but then he dropped off. So call back in. I want to hear. I want to hear your sweet musical lyrics here. But Jake, you're down at 49ers practice, and there's something you wanted to bring up about fun names or something like that. What's going on?
All right,
there?
So folks, here is the situation. The 49ers have lost Trent Williams, their left tackle. He's out for the year. Their backup left tackle, Jalen Moore, is out for the year. Their starting left guard, Aaron Banks, is out for the year. Their second string guard, Ben Bartsch, is out for the year. Their backup at both left guard and left tackle, Spencer Burford, may be out this week. They don't know. They're waiting on MRIs.
Everyone remember this. There's going to be a test on this later.
So we get into a situation where the 49ers are down to their fourth string left guard, and possibly a fourth string left tackle. Now, I know. You're saying, all right, where are you going with this? What's the point? The point is that the 49ers have an incredibly funny opportunity, incredibly rare opportunity, to go through the practice squads of the NFL and say, all right, who's got a random offensive tackle that we can put in? And they have some guys on their team that they might promote. But as I was doing that, I looked through some of these practice squads. I looked at some of these names. And let me tell you, folks, there are some incredible names out there. Number one, right off the bat, and I promised this to some people. I said, I'm hosting today. I will mention the practice squad. Number one name on an NFL practice squad, Coy Kronk. That is spelled C-O-Y-C-R-O-N-K.
Kronk?
Coy Kronk.
Like Kronk from Emperor's New Groove?
That's exactly.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together.
That's exactly right.
Hope he gets the right lever.
Incredible. Terrible athlete. Bottom 10 percentile athlete at the offensive tackle position. I don't care. His name's Coy Kronk. Sign him today. A few other people.
He's got great muffins, though.
That's right. Theo Benedict.
Who saw an Emperor's New Groove reference coming on the morning roast?
I did. I knew it was coming. I was thinking about it this morning as I left in the darkness and the cold, rainy darkness.
See, this is why we're in sync, Jake. See, I love making obscure references like that on this show every now and then, because while a lot of people don't get them, there's like seven people out there who do. And, like, those are my people.
That's right.
That's how I find my people.
And my people are the ones who want to hear about the practice squad. I'm going to give you a few more names.
No, I love this.
And then we'll close this loop.
I'm one of your people.
Number two, Theo Benedict from the Chicago Bears. You may remember him from Hard Knocks, I believe. He stripped down to his boxers and sang for, like, a rookie performance. He's an athlete.
As people are known to do.
90th percentile athlete. Last one I'll mention. Actually, we got two more. One, Gottlieb Ayedze.
Those are two last names. Forget two first names. Those are two last names.
That's right. Incredible name. Out of Maryland. He's on the Raiders practice squad. Also, pretty decent athlete.
What was that last name again?
Ayedze.
How many times did you have to practice saying?
I didn't practice it. I'm just going off the cuff, and I may be butchering it.
I am. Well, hey, there's no show that does mispronunciations better than the Morning Roast. We have an entire category in our Doobie Awards dedicated to it. Shout out Big Smooth, 2024 winner of the mispronunciation of the year. Andre Iguodala was his winning one.
I respect that. It's like Andre Agassi and Iguodala had a terrible love child. Anyway, moving on to the last name. Last name and more of a realistic option, Kellen Deesh. Out of that one, I may be mispronouncing.
Kellen Deesh is a fun one.
Deesh out of Arizona State on the Titans practice squad. You know, we got a former front office man running the Titans over there. And so, you know, he's a 97th percentile athlete at the offensive tackle position. I say, if you're not going to get Coy Kronk, who is objectively a terrible athlete at the offensive tackle position, if you don't Kronk it up, go get Kellen Deesh and just say, we don't know.
Get Deesh guy.
We don't know who you are or what you are, but go pick him up. Go let him ride. Ride into the sunset. None of this matters.
What position does he play?
They all play tackle.
Oh, they all play offensive tackle.
These are all offensive tackles.
Oh, wow, nice.
So go get him. Go get him. Let him ride. And I just think the 49ers need to embrace the ridiculousness of the situation they're in.
Oh, absolutely.
And say, all right, we're going to go with a fake punt. We're going to go pick up a guy named Coy Kronk. This is a meaningless situation.
Don't be coy about this.
Damn right. Let's be funny. Let's be weird. Let's lean into the void, stare into the abyss, and say, let's go for it.
No, I like that way of thinking because, like, yeah, this season has gone off the rails. It is a season of hell for the 49ers. And actually, really quick, if we're going to talk funny names and mispronunciations, there's two cuts I got to play. You got to hear that. We talk about mispronunciations on the morning roast. Big Smooth, he had it this year. It was basically a tie last year between Bonte and Shasky. Jake, these are all time. You got to hear this one. So this is how Bonte earned his mispronunciation of the year.
Give him that last 2 months that Gunnar Henderson got with the Orioles last year. Audie Rushman, who we're going to see in the home run derby.
That's Bonte talking about his guy, Adley Rushman, Baltimore Orioles. This is after Bonte was saying how much of an Orioles fan he is, and then he drops Audie Rushman.
Sounds like a Dutch, you know, skier, Adley Rushman.
A very rich Dutch skier. He's got a very nice hat. I'll be honest, I call him Audie Rushman now. It's just kind of... It's one of those ones where it's just like, I don't know, one of my favorite movies is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and they call Sigmund Freud Sigmund Freud, and because I love that movie so much, I call him Sigmund Freud. Like, nice. It's one of those situations. But then there's this one here from Shasky that's all time.
If you think about it, Ayuk and Debo, Juwan Jennings on third down, George Kittle, you got Ute Juice, you got CMC.
I'm going to need to hear that one more time.
If you think about it, Ayuk and Debo. Juwan Jennings on third down. George Kittle. You got Ute Juice. You got CMC.
We're trying to figure out where that one was going, right?
Ute Juice.
He's talking about Kyle Juszczyk, but he botched the words. Anyway, if we're talking about names and mispronunciations, I can't let that happen without playing those there. They're hopefully not listening because they're probably punching air right now if they are listening. So Shasky especially, he always cringes when he hears that one. But anyway, enough funny names. Let's talk about this current 49ers season because I do agree with you, Jake. There are some times you just have to lean into the ridiculousness of it. It has been a miserable season from hell. And in those situations, really all you can do is just find ways to laugh. And I think that's what you're trying to, you know, try and find some semblance of joy throughout the rest of the season. I kind of agree. I'm spacing on which caller was. He called in. He basically just said, like, I want to see this team play for pride.
Play with pride.
I think it was Nico and Sack. That's who it was. Play for pride. And that's what I kind of want to see, too. I don't like the idea of just rolling over for a draft pick. Rolling over for a draft pick. That said, though, it might not matter. I think the Lions are going to be coming in to Levi's on Monday night.
They're going to get throttled.
They are going to be thirsty for blood. They are playing for revenge. And the Lions, I mean, they're the injuries that they've sustained on the defensive side of the ball, not as noticeable as the kind of injuries that the Niners have sustained on both sides. But Aiden Hutchinson, that's a big one. But they've lost a lot of guys that were, it's like, hardcore Lions, like Lions fans know them. Fans outside Detroit probably don't know a lot of the names.
I mean, if you don't know these names, like Alim McNeil, like they lost almost every starter on their defense. It's been ridiculous.
But luckily their entire offense is healthy. I mean, they did just lose David Montgomery, but they still have Jahmyr Gibbs. They still have Sam Laporta. They still have Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams. That's a dynamic offense there. Jared Goff absolutely knows how to run that system. They still have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. The Lions are a team that they are good enough to why these injuries on defense are piling up. They're good enough on the offensive side of the ball that you haven't seen it totally affect them yet, the way that injuries have crippled the Niners. So I expect the Lions coming in, they're going to be playing for blood. They think they should have won last year. The Lions this year are, to me, are basically what the Niners were last year. A team that knew that they were better than the result of their season, which was ending in the NFC title game, and they're in Operation 1C. They're in Operation Bourbon Street. The Lions are absolutely going all in for that 1C. They want to make sure that they have to make the entire NFC go through Ford Field if they want to go to the Super Bowl. And right now, I mean, they're battling with the Vikings. But the Lions, man, they are having the revenge season that the Niners had last year.
Yeah, I think so. If we want to talk about what we want to see from the Niners going forward, I have a Christmas wish list for them.
Okay, yeah, what do you got?
Yeah, so number one, by the way, they're playing the Lions. The Lions throw man coverage more than any other team in the league. It's the 49ers' kryptonite. They run cover one man 40% of the time. No one is even close to that. So they're running total man coverage about half the time.
Which is bad news if you're the Niners.
It's a nightmare for Debo Samuel especially, which leads to two things. One, throw the ball to Ricky Pearsall.
Yes.
I need to see at least...
Very much on board with that.
I need to see at least five targets from Ricky Pearsall in each of these last two games. And if And if Pearsall doesn't win against Mann, and or if he drops him, or if he's not in the right spot, that's on him. I'm just saying.
Well, how else are we supposed to know what kind of play? We just had Baldy on. I'm not going to play the sound here, but basically, Ricky Pearsall, he's got taken an incomplete right now on his grade because, again, got shot. It's not his fault. But it absolutely has sapped his season.
No question.
And I think these next two games, it's absolutely a chance to see what has Ricky Pearsall got. I don't care if he lines up on the line, off the line. I don't care if he lines up on the wrong side of the line of scrimmage. Throw the ball to him on the next play. Make him feel empowered. Make him feel like he has a future with this team. Now, if you do that and he drops the ball or he can't get off man coverage and he just, for lack of a better word, stinks, then yeah, you move forward from there.
Yeah.
But let's get there first.
He doesn't, though, by the way. Again.
No, I'm saying if.
Correct. If he gets target five times and he does not make the most of them, I'll be the first to criticize him. Like, I have no agenda here. I was high on Pearsall coming out of the draft. If he's bad, I will tell you he's bad. I just think I see him multiple times where he's open, he has a chance, he's just not a primary read in this offense. And you know what Juwan Jennings is. You don't really know what Pearsall is yet, and how about you take these last two games and find out? Number two, I would like to see, again, the protections thing. I know this is really in the weeds, and we talked to Baldy about it, about whether Brock should be able...
And in the weeds where we live.
Whether he should be allowed to adjust the protections. And Brock technically is allowed to. And what that means is if you see something, you can tell the offensive line, hey, if you're going to, you know, have a 5-0 and you take the most, you know, dangerous rushers, I don't know, we're going to slide. There's just a lot of different protections. I'm not going to get into it. But it's hard for the quarterback in this offense because there's so much motion. You can can to multiple plays. There's just a lot Brock has to worry about. He has to diagnose coverages. So there's a lot on his plate, and I'm not saying he should have to do that every play. It's a ridiculous thing to ask him to do every play. But I do think in key third downs, especially when it's something you're trying to get to and it's third and beyond five, I do think they should say, all right, hey, Brock, for these last two games, let's say, you know, when you see an opportunity, you can maybe check, or not check, you can adjust the protection to say, all right, we're going to leave Kittle in here, or we're going to leave a back in, we're going to switch the protection this way, just to see. And maybe it doesn't work, maybe it's not worth doing, but it is worth experimenting with, in my opinion. And then the last thing I want to see, and it's probably not going to happen now because their entire left side of the offensive line is a mess, but I wanted to see them play Drake Nugent. He's the center out of Michigan who had a pretty good preseason. He's not a great anchor, but it's also like they need a future at the center position. Jake Brendel isn't it, and they don't know what Drake Nugent is. Why don't you take the last two games and find out? Now, they'll probably say that they don't want Brock Purdy to get demolished in these last two games, which is fair. But I would say, let's go find out what Drake Nugent is.
Yeah, I think that's what these next two games should really all be about, is everything you can do to set yourself up for next year. So I agree with a lot of your list. I definitely want to see more Ricky Pearsall. Like, let's keep feeding Ricky the ball, get him empowered there. Another thing I want to see is I want to see more consistent targets from George Kittle. You know, I think every drive should have at least one George Kittle target, especially when it's a drive where you're basically driving for your season, which is, that was the case against the LA Rams. You were driving for your season. I'm not talking about the last drive where he threw the interception. I think it was the drive right before that. But there was not a single target to George Kittle on... So this is the one... Yeah, so it was that last drive. The last drive for the season ends with the interception of Juwan Jennings. You got a Garendo run that went nowhere. Brock tried to get a throw to Rick... Brock connected with Ricky on a post over the middle, had a Grando again. Oh, so he did get a Kittle on that drive. Never mind. but it's just, I need to see more George Kittle on these drives. That's basically what it comes down to. It's just, when the game's online, I need to see Kittle. Just the game, I just need to see more Kittle in general, because that is the driver of your offense there. Every time the ball goes to Kittle, he has basically kind of been playing the role this year that Brandon Ayuk was last year, which is the spark plug.
And they did that. And they did that in the last game. He got targeted nine times, but it's been like too little, too late.
Yes,
where a
and
lot
it's
of
never in the moments where you need it the most.
And we talked about Baldy too. He was like the tight end screens. Like, where have those been all year? And that's something that, You can run against a lot of looks, and it's an easy way to get Kittle involved, especially when teams are already crushing your offensive line, and you can sort of leverage that into letting teams go by you and running those screens. And that's a way to build confidence in that offensive line. Let those guys get out and run and gallop, and that's where their strength is, ideally, is being mobile offensive linemen who are in space and are targeting linebackers and defensive backs and getting out and moving people. And they just haven't done it until these, you know, against Chicago in this last game. So I'm with you. I think Kittle needs to be involved, and he's going to hit 1,000 yards if he gets, I think he's down. I think he's at 969. So he's like 31 yards away from his 4,000-yard season.
You know they're going to get him that. I would not be shocked, Jake, honestly, as we look at these last two games, if this is essentially the Niners' last game of the year. Like, I think you're going to see Brock, Kittle, Debo, all those guys ball out, try and get their incentives or whatever, and whatever happens. And, like, I would love to see the Niners just kind of go all out in this game against Detroit, see if you can stun the world on Monday Night Football and ruin Detroit's plans for that one seed, because the way Minnesota's playing right now, they look like they're not going to lose. I mean, the Lions and Vikings, I believe, do play each other in the last game of the year. They're both 13-2 right now, sitting atop that NFC North. The Vikings got the Packers, and then they go to Detroit. So that'll be a fun game to end the season there. But you could make this season a lot more frustrating for Detroit if you can go all out and shock the world on Monday night. And that's the kind of win that can energize a team and set you up for a good season next year. So that's what I would like to see. Just play with a little bit of pride on Monday night. If you end up losing to the Lions, you know what? You're expected to do that. We're not going to lose any sleep over it. But then you're probably just going to be sitting everybody against Arizona. There's going to be some guys where it's like, you know, Debo needs to do this to get this, or he needs, you know, this guy needs to do this to get that. Try and get guys their incentives there. But I'm looking at Arizona's basically, let's see what Brandon Allen can do. That's what I expect there.
I would say they should get even weirder. Put Josh Dobbs out there, man.
Yeah,
I don't
know why he wasn't the number two off the bat, because I liked him a lot more in training camp.
I can answer that for you.
Yeah.
He couldn't get guys even lined up correctly in training camp.
Like
Brandon Allen knows the offense and can actually execute it. Josh Dobbs is the sort of, I made the comparison before, but like the Family Guy, with that episode where, I don't know why I did this for Family Guy.
That's what I think when I think Family Guy.
Right.
Too.
So there's an episode where Peter is getting sold a timeshare, and they're like, all right, you can take a boat or
the mystery box,
or you can take the mystery box. And Josh Dobbs is the mystery box. He could be anything, even a boat. So that's what Josh Dobbs is, but they just don't trust him because he couldn't run the offense in training camp, and I don't blame them. But I would love to see them.
Yeah, no, that'll do it, especially with how Kyle Shanahan is with the system.
Right.
Yeah,
remember in the NFC Championship where they just like let Brock hand it off? It's like, let Christian, this game's over. Like, have fun. Like, let Christian McCaffrey throw the ball. Let Kyle Juszczyk throw the ball. You don't have a quarterback. Like, I don't know, pull out the wing tee. Be adaptable. That's one thing.
And that would at least be fun to watch, because let's be honest, these last two games, the Thursday night against the Rams and this past Sunday against the Dolphins in Hard Rock Stadium, like, they were just not fun games to watch. Like, they were not aesthetically pleasing to watch. Entertainment-wise, it was I joke with this job, Jake. You know, there's work, and then there's quote work.
Right.
Like, when I go to Giants games, you know, that's quote work. You know, because, like, I'm having too much fun there to really consider it work.
You're having fun at the Giants games?
I'm weird that way, yes. I'm wearing my Giants World Series champion ugly sweater right now.
Props to you. You're one of the few people that still...
Yeah. Steven Rizzotto, he's there. We have fun at those games. So, I mean, I also, you know, get to go on the field and behind the scenes and all that stuff.
No.
That's kidney candy store for me. But a lot of times watching these Niner games, last year it was quote work. These last two Niner games, it's been no quotes. It's this has been work.
What I wanted to ask Kyle Shanahan, and I might honestly, I'll probably ask him later this week when I go down there, is like, how, like, do you think about experimenting, doing something for fun? And maybe that's just a week 18 thing. And with the lack of offensive line, I get it. You know, you don't want to experiment too much because you're down to your fourth string left guard and left tackle, and you're trying not to get Brock Purdy demolished.
Oh, that's what Brandon Allen's for.
Right. So in week 18, I want to see Josh Dobbs out there run the wing tee. I want to see running backs in three-point stances. Put your hands in the ground like the 1985 San Francisco 49ers, where you got a split backfield, you got three-point stances, and you're just running plays that look hilarious. That's all I want to see. I want to see something that's entertaining. It's an entertainment product. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, the 49ers are failing to entertain. Do something weird. I don't care if it's bad. Bad can be good if it's entertaining.
Possibly.
You know? There you go.
That's right, Kyle.
That is Jake Hutchinson. I am Sam Lubman. This is the Morning Roast here on Christmas Eve. 888-957-9570. We're talking about what we've learned about the Niners this year. We're talking about what our wish list is for the Niners for the rest of the season here. We want to hear from you guys, the listeners, the roasters. Call in. It's Christmas Eve. Best way to spread Christmas cheer, singing loud for all to hear. I probably said that a couple times already today. But yeah, call in and sing your favorite Christmas carols. I'll sing it with you even if it makes it a little bit easier for you. We've had a few people call in already. Johnny and Modesto had one of the best 49ers themed Christmas carols you'll ever hear to the tune of Jingle Bells. If you missed it, go check it out on the Odyssey app. There's 95 Cent Games on there, along with thousands of other stations, millions of podcasts, and they're all free, all on the Odyssey app. Sports talk, music news, some great podcasts like the Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys podcast that I do with Joe Shasky. We're going to be getting some more episodes out of there as soon as the Giants sign Corbin Burns. Hopefully that still happens. For all your favorite teams like the Niners and Warriors, your favorite shows like Steiny and Guru or the Morning Roast. By the way, no Steiny and Guru today. You're going to be getting Evan Giddings and Kyle Madsen.
Yay!
Giddings and Madsen. That's a big yay. Or catch amazing interviews like when Steve Kerr joins the station every week. So be locked in on that. Or use the rewind feature. Go back to, I believe it was 7:20 this morning, and hear Johnny and Modesto with one of the best 49ers carols you will ever hear. George Kittle was asked after the game on Sunday what his lessons from the seasons were. This is what he had to say about that.
Football is really difficult. When the ball doesn't bounce your way, when you have turnovers and you're not forcing turnovers, you have to play at a very elite level, you know, if that's what's going to happen during the game. And we have not been playing at that elite level. And we have to continue to strive to get better every single week. And while we are eliminated, we still have 2 weeks of football left. And, you know, if I have football in front of me, I'm going to play as hard as I possibly can. And I'm going to try to get the guys around me to do that same thing.
And that's kind of the tone that we want to see set. I mean, it's basically echoing what you and I were just saying, Jake, because we want to see these guys play hard, play physical. It just give us a reason for hope next year.
Yeah, I asked Kyle on the conference call on Monday. It was like, how do you motivate guys in this situation going forward? And he essentially said, well, it's like your job as an NFL player to be motivated and have pride in it. I'm like, well, it's not really an innovative answer, and I get it. Like, you need to know that. But, like, you're in a situation where there's nothing to play for except you're trying to play for a contract and your own personal pride and whatever. To me, I would go in and have a pretty open discussion with position coaches, open the door and say, hey, what's one thing that's been bugging you? What's one thing you think we should try? Open it all up and say, hey, guys, we got nothing to play for in these last two games. Do you want to try something? Has there been a look you think we should exploit? Is there a motion you think you've seen from other teams? There's been this weird spinner pirouette run that the Packers have run and other teams have ripped off. Do you think we should be copying that? Like, open the door, get guys involved, and have some sort of interesting wrinkle to at least get them excited for that. At least get them involved in the dialogue. And maybe they're doing that behind closed doors, but it sure feels yeah. and sounds like they're just trying to prepare as if it's a same normal game.
Business
and to me,
as usual.
To me, it's not business as usual. Go get weird. I think that does actually matter, and that does help motivate guys for the last two random games when you are trying to find out who should be here, who shouldn't. And maybe test some things out that you've been thinking about.
You know, one thing I've noticed, because I mean, I get all the transcripts from these Niners pressers, and so I like to read through them. And the last few weeks, I've been noticing the same question popping up, and it's the question you basically asked yesterday, Jake. And I'm glad that you brought up that you're the one who asked that question, because it seems like every week for the last few weeks, the question is, are guys motivated? What's the attitude like? You know, are guys still excited to show up for work? And like, this is a team that we know has a very strong culture. This is a team that, for however frustrated this fan base gets with Kyle Shanahan, we know the guys down at you know, Levi Stadium will go all out for Kyle. They have bought into Kyle's philosophy. They bought into Kyle's system. They fall in line behind Kyle Shanahan. But the fact that so many of these reporters, it seems like it's different reporters every week. I've heard Jennifer Lee Chan ask it. I've heard Mike Silver bring it up. I think I've heard Cam Inman ask the question. You've asked the question. It's coming from a lot of different sources. Why is it that that keeps coming up? Why does the notion of motivation keep coming up for a team that we know is very strong culturally, a team that we know is very professional and has had a lot of success? Like, I feel like if motivation is a question this consistently, that makes me think that there's something that we're not seeing on the surface that I think that the media is trying to poke and prod at and get something out of there. Am I seeing something there? Am I reading something too much into it? It's just, the fact that this question keeps getting brought up, though, is interesting to me.
So I think that's a natural thing that happens when the season goes sideways and goes out of reach. I personally only asked this last week because it's out of reach. I think there's some people that like to ask earlier, and that's your prerogative, because you want to test the waters and see where they're at. I do think where I come from on this and why it's important for the 49ers to, it doesn't matter if they win or lose. I mean, it would help them in the draft. They're probably going to get the 11th pick if they lose out. Where it really matters is you have a lot of young guys on this team who have not been around it, who have not seen it. You relied on a lot of rookies this year who haven't been in the playoffs. Next year, you might have 10 draft picks. They have a bunch of compensatory picks coming their way, and they're going to need to hit on most of those draft picks to build this thing forward. So what you need to do is be able to say, all right, we are a team that plays with pride, that has a belief in ourselves to say, all right, this is meaningless, objectively, but we're actually going to play. So how do you motivate guys to do that, even if there is nothing to play for? I think you lean on Fred Warner, you lean on George Kittle, those sort of guys who are going to play relentless, regardless of what happens. But I think you need to sort of have proof and keep a standard, and not just like flame out in the final two games and say, all right, it's okay, it's whatever, the season's lost, because that sets a standard that was one of the hardest things the 49ers had to overcome, you know, besides personnel in their first 2 and 3 years, is say, all right, this is what we're trying to get to. We haven't achieved that. And now that there's a lot of new guys, they have not seen the playoffs, they haven't seen that level of standard, and so you kind of have to prove it to them. That's where I think it goes the last couple weeks of the year, and why it's important to, you know, why you ask about motivation, why it's important to play, you know, somewhat decent, somewhat prideful football.
Yeah, it's just, for me, it was just interesting the fact that it was coming up in the middle of the year, and it's just, right. But yeah, I don't know if you've seen any of that kind of locker room discontent while you're down there. I haven't heard a whole lot of it. I mean, there's been, you know, a few negative stories here and there. Obviously, the Devontae Campbell debacle that you kind of took note of, that was obviously a dark mark there. Nick Bosa's had some of his, you know, distractionary moments as well. I don't want to get too deep in that. In fact, that's probably the conversation right there. But overall, it doesn't feel like there's like any sort of like serious negativity going on behind.
No. I haven't felt that at all. I felt a lot of frustration.
It's understandable.
I have felt the sense of Fred Warner seeing Dre Greenlaw out there. And you see how much better they can actually defend the run with Dre Greenlaw out there. I see more of that. I see frustration with a lack of, one, not having the right personnel, not having guys that can get the job done, and knowing, all right, we're not a team, especially on defense, that's going to get that creative schematically. We're going to play it pretty straight up, and if we don't have the guys, we're not going to get it done. And going into a game knowing that is kind of tough. It kind of wears on you. And Fred Warner also knowing he's not the player he was at the start of the season, where until that Patriots game, he was the best defensive player in the league. Mm-hmm. And he's been okay, good, somewhere in the middle.
A fractured ankle will do that to you.
I mean, he had a really bad play where Jonnu Smith got like 22 yards, and Fred Warner just
got burned.
He got burned. And that doesn't happen if Fred Warner, I think, is at full health. So I think there's frustration more in injuries, in lack of performance internally, and also knowing you just don't have the right dudes. You don't have the ability to accomplish it. And even if you do have the dudes, you're not getting the job done. And that sort of stuff, where it's penalties, where it's lapses, lack of communication, lack of function, that sort of stuff where you just probably bring it up in the film room and it gets called out every single week. That's the stuff that I think is just, it wears on you as a team, especially as you just feel the season slip away and it's the same talking point week and week and week after week.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM HD1 in San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. We are now legally a radio station again. Got a few minutes left here in this segment. What have we learned about Kyle Shanahan this year?
I would say we learned that Kyle, I don't know if we learned that much, but Kyle is pretty rigid. Kyle, I think, when you look at, it's a bad year for the Shanahan side of the tree. The Shanahan-McVay split, where you got LaFleur, and you got Kevin O'Connell, and you got McVay on one side, and they're all looking pretty good, and then you got Shanahan and McDaniel and Bobby Slowick on the other side. It feels like a battle of idealism versus pragmatism, and you've got those teams, the ones I've mentioned with McVay and LaFleur and O'Connell, they're running a lot of 11 personnel, and the other side's still sticking with a lot of 21 personnel. And there's not a lot of flexibility. There's not a lot of saying, all right, Juwan Jennings isn't an X receiver. Maybe let's try Ricky Pearsall there, even though he's a rookie. Like, that's not working. They're saying, nope, we're going to stick with it. They're also saying, all right, well, we're going to just assume we get zone coverage, even though teams are throwing man at us more than ever. We're going to be rigid there. I think the rigidity is not something we've learned about Kyle, but it's something that has been shown more this season than ever before. It's been a bad year for him, and that's not to say that he hasn't called good games or that he hasn't had good game plans, but there has been a rigidity and an inflexibility and a lack of creativity and sort of a reliance that Christian McCaffrey was going to solve the whole thing that I think is pretty frustrating and something to criticize Kyle for.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, there is a level of adaptation that Kyle needs to do. And we've talked about it. He needs to reinvent himself. What that looks like, I'm not quite sure. That probably depends on the personnel he's going to have next year. I feel like with Kyle Shanahan this year, I think what really frustrates fans is just like, it's almost, I call it the Kyle Shanahan paradox, in that I don't think there is a coach out there who gets as much heat, as much criticism, as much second guessing, as much frustration and just flat out hate from their fan base, while at the same time having a seat as cold as Kyle Shanahan. Like, Kyle Shanahan has so many traits of a coach that, for all intents and purposes, should be getting fired. I mean, he's failed at three quarterback decisions already. He's gotten lucky with Brock Purdy and how that's worked out. And even now there's questions on that. But despite all that, I mean, obviously fans, there's frustration there. They want him gone. But I don't get a sense, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Jake, I don't get a sense that there's any desire to move off of Kyle Shanahan at all in this front office, despite the fact that there are just so many issues with what's gone on in his time here. And that's where I get the paradox from. This is a coach that, by all intents and purposes, looks like a fireable coach, but at the same time, the idea of firing him outside of fan circles is just a non-starter.
What people don't understand, what people don't understand is that Jed York is not firing Kyle Shanahan. He's not even considering firing Kyle Shanahan this offseason.
And I don't think he should, which is, again, another, as much as frustrated, like, I get frustrated with Shanahan, I'm skeptical of Shanahan. But even I can sit here and admit that I don't think Shanahan is warranted a fire.
The reality of Kyle Shanahan as a coach is that he has built this thing from the ground up. They had the worst roster in the NFL when he took over. He's built up an incredible roster. They've made some questionable decisions, and they showed a lack of flexibility this year when they did have injuries. So Kyle deserves some criticism for that. He deserves some criticism for the way the team has been prepared with the amount of offensive line failures, whether that's just blocking. They just flat out haven't executed. But the idea that Kyle Shanahan would get fired this offseason or go to Chicago is insane. Those it's not even reports. The fact that people were getting asked about it, no one's reporting that because it's not real. He's not going to Chicago.
It was an idea kicked around by Mike Florio.
Yes, which is, sure, kick around whatever ideas you want. That's not happening. Jed York understands, after moving on from Jim Harbaugh and seeing the reality of his own failure, his massive mistake of getting rid of Harbaugh and what that entailed, and moving to Jim Kelly and or Chip Kelly and Jim Tomsula, and just that nightmare, wading through that, he is not moving on from Kyle Shanahan this year, and I'd be shocked if he moved on from him next year unless they had an absolutely dreadful season. I think it would take this year, another bad year next year. It would take a really bad year next year. I think they would consider it after next year if they had a really bad year. I still think
that's when the seat starts heating up.
I still think it would take this year, next year, and then year three is going sideways. Then you pull the plug just because of all the goodwill he's built up. And they also, you got to remember, owners and their coaches, if they have a good relationship, if they have a proven track record, it's kind of hard to move on from that. Like, Jed York likes Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan has a good relationship with Jed York. At the end of the day, that's what decides whether Kyle keeps his job or not.
That's what doomed it with Jim Harbaugh. Yeah.
And so as long as that is intact, as long as there is a vision and Jed York is kept appraised and he believes in what they're building, which, to be honest, they have to retool and the Rams had to go through that too. If he believes in that vision, he's going to keep Kyle around. And to be honest, I don't see any reason why you would fire him this offseason.
No.
I mean, there's plenty of criticism. He is a flawed coach in a number of ways, but he's also a very good coach in a number of ways and has built a system and a culture that most of the guys who've been around really believe in.
I mean, this is a guy who took an expansion team, basically, and had him in the Super Bowl a couple years later. And then I think there's, only 14 guys, I think, on this team now that were on that 2019 Super Bowl team and Super Bowl 54. So he basically rebuilt that Super Bowl team around his core guys. And he's still got a lot of those core guys left. A lot of those core guys are going to be back next year. Kyle Shanahan has shown not once but twice that he can build up a team that can get you to the Super Bowl. What happens in the Super Bowl there? I don't know. But the question, people love to say Kyle Shanahan can't win the big game. I wonder, does Kyle Shanahan have a big game problem, or does he simply have a GOAT problem? Think of the quarterbacks that have beaten him in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. That's two-thirds of your GOAT trident right there.
And the 1 year they would have been able to face Joe Burrow, the Rams get him.
And I honestly believe that if Jaquaski Tart comes up with that pick, the Niners Super Bowl champions, because I think the Niners would have beaten the Bengals in that Super Bowl there.
Right.
On the other side, we're going to have some Christmas fun. And Jake, to be honest, if you and I are doing the show together, I got to throw some basic Brock Purdy questions at you.
Go for it.
Just get your stance on where things at with him. We'll probably throw that the Sam Darnold word in there as well. We'll have some Christmas fun too. I got a little fun Christmas game that I played on the station before. We'll try it again and see if it hits again like it did last time, because that's usually how sequels work. They're always better the second time. Shout out Empire Strikes Back. And all of that that is coming up on the game is brought to you by Bay Area Fast Track. That's Jake Hutchinson. I'm Sam Lubman. We're about to go to the break right now because Steven Risotto is going to hit the button.